Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Monday, February the 26th, 2024. Hope you had a nice weekend. And joining me in studio right now is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
Now, Ed, you went to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention last week in Nashville, right?
I did.
Did you go, Fred, at all?
I was right here with you.
Okay, that's what I thought. I usually go, but I didn't make it this time. Fred, you usually go, too.
We have gone. It's been a number of years, but we let Ed go this year.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Although I did listen. We were driving home on Friday. I listened to Trivia Friday. And Jonathan Coker, by the way, did a great job. And you and JJ did great, as usual. But you did talk about me. You accused me of going to Atlantic City.
Did I do that?
Which I would have gone, but I took the wrong exit. Which is why I don't gamble.
You went down.
I always do the wrong thing.
Right. So, well, good to have you home. And was there a particular highlight of the week?
I did go to several of the sessions there, and there were some really interesting speakers and panels. I almost went. President Trump addressed NRB.
That was Thursday
night.
Yeah.
And I was going to go to that. However, he was supposed to start the evening program was from 7 to 9. There would be three other speakers before President Trump. I think he wound up getting there late. 8 o'clock was probably when he was scheduled to speak. But they opened the doors at 4 o'clock. And I told my wife, who went with me, I'm not sitting inside a room for 4 hours waiting.
For anybody.
For anybody.
Except for her, your wife.
Well, my wife, I would, if she was going to speak. But I would have been interested to hear the former president speak. But I just.
4 hours.
So 4 hours.
For security purposes.
Yes, security purposes. And I think once you go in, you can't really go out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he has Secret Service detail, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere he goes.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the luxury afforded a former president, I guess you could say. Now, do vice presidents get that? Do you know? They probably get something. Or
I'm not sure if former vice presidents get
Secret Service.
Secret Service protection. They should.
For a while, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. I bet he has some kind of security, when he was president for Trump. I mean, when he was, Secretary of State for President Trump.
Right.
All right, so, well, welcome home. Glad you got home safe and sound and that you found your way out of the Opryland Hotel.
That thing is massive. It really is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
well, sadly, the top news story is... Well, it's sad.
Yes.
It's happened in Georgia over the weekend, or at least maybe not over the weekend, but late last week.
Late last week, yeah, the death of Lakin Riley, 22 years old. Learned this morning and doing some reading, she's a born-again Christian and praised for her faith.
For those who don't know what happened, Fred, tell us what happened.
Well, last Thursday morning, Lakin Riley, 22 years old, she's a student at University of Georgia, nursing student there.
In Athens.
She went out for a morning jog, and she never came back. And her body was found several hours later. And there is a man arrested, Jose Antonio Ibarra, 26 years old. And that has become the story for at least the conservative media. And I want to talk a little bit more about media coverage of this story just in a few minutes. Because he entered this country illegally back in 2022. He's been in trouble with the law before in New York. He is from Venezuela. in the course of the investigation there by Athens police, they also questioned his brother, who is also in the country illegally, had a false green card. But this is a guy with a record, this guy who's been now charged with the murder of Lake and Riley. As I say, Jose Antonio Ibarra, 26. His wife talked to her. Apparently, he was in trouble with authorities in New York. He was arrested for endangering the welfare of a child. Apparently had a little child on the back of a motorcycle without a
helmet. But he wasn't deported in New York.
He wasn't deported in New York. And he worked in New York. He worked DoorDash, Uber Eats, worked at a local restaurant. This is a man who entered the country illegally, and he's still able to do all these things. Anyway, he is now in jail, under arrest.
Formerly charged with the murder?
Yes.
Of
and as part of a larger story of what we're learning, there are now apparently these single young men coming in from Venezuela. A number of them are parts of gangs, Venezuelan gangs, that are now operating in this country. Some of the attacks that you've seen videos in New York are Venezuelan gang members. Some of the people who attacked those New York police officers back a few weeks ago, Venezuelan gang members. This is all on Joe Biden, every bit of this. And Joe Biden has the audacity. He has plans apparently to go to the border on Thursday this week, and he's going to blame Republicans. He's going to say Republicans aren't giving me the money to secure the border.
You know, there's a number of ways in which the federal government under Joe Biden and then state governments like New York State, city governments like New York City, where Ibarra was arrested in New York City. I'm going to just speak generally because this man has not been convicted yet, okay? But there are people coming into this country illegally. That's on the Biden administration. There are blue states that originally welcomed these illegal immigrants come, sanctuary state, okay? Sanctuary cities where these illegal immigrants, when they commit crimes, are not prosecuted. They are loosed. And then
what's meant by sanctuary cities, I think.
Well, the sanctuary city part is we're not going to cooperate with the federal government and turn them over to ICE. So that's one failure. But then you have the Soros-backed district attorneys that, generally speaking, are not prosecuting or are letting people out on without any kind of cash bail. And so that's another failure. Because then these illegals can go to other communities, other states. And so this man, whether he's found guilty of Lake and Riley's murder or not, we need to let the system do its work. But he was arrested in New York City, and then he wound up in Georgia.
Yes.
Because he was not detained. Mm-hmm. He was not put in jail and kept there. Mm-hmm. He was released. So all these failures mean that people like Lake and Riley, a nursing student, they're victims.
Yeah.
They're victims, and they're citizens being victimized by these people crossing the border.
Her poor parents, I saw pictures of her family. Again, she's a college student at the University of Georgia in Athens. Thursday, she goes out for a jog. And this man, who's the suspect, allegedly, you have to use that now because, you know, he hasn't had his day in court, killed her. He must have been stalking her, seems to me.
Yeah. Reports have said they didn't know each other. No.
Yeah.
No connection.
Yeah. But the point is, it's tragic and sad and heartbreaking that this young lady's life was snuffed out by this man, again, allegedly. But what makes it more infuriating is what Ed described. Here you have a guy who has already committed, He's here illegally into our country. He got here, according to ICE, in 2022. Okay. Entered the country illegally in 2022, according to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which begs the question, if you have him tagged for being here illegally, how do you know that when he entered the country? How do they know that?
That's a good question.
Unless it's like we've suspected, like we've heard, you know, basically when you enter the border illegally, a southern border, you're just giving asylum, you're just giving basically a welcome wagon package and told to appear in a court 5 years from now,
right,
or something like that, never to be heard
from. So they would know that this is when he crossed the border.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. How else would you know when he crossed the border? You know, so he shouldn't have been here. And he should have been deported, seems to me, when he was in New York and he was arrested and they found out he was an illegal.
Didn't you say, Fred, in our story meeting, that countries like Venezuela don't want these people back?
No, Maduro doesn't want them back.
Right.
He's part of the criminal element there.
Yeah.
So he can't be deported back to his house because the dictator leader there doesn't want him.
Well, that's one way to lower your crime rate.
Yeah.
Is you take criminals and you... I say we start shipping criminals to Canada.
Mm.
You know, that'll lower our crime rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put them up in the north. Tongue in cheek.
Put them up in the Northwest Territories this time of the year.
Hey, look, polar bears got to eat too.
Arrested.
Is that too dark?
Yeah. I tell you what, this is as you mentioned, back to who's responsible for this. President Joe Biden has let millions of these folks come into our country, some good, some bad. Really shouldn't matter at the border. You should be told, no, you can't
right.
come into this country illegally. You got to have to go through the legal process. But Joe Biden opened up the floodgates. We all know it's well documented to let millions of people come here illegally. And now we have this problem. We have a multitude of problems.
Yes.
And they, quite frankly, only started.
Yes.
And one of them is the criminal element that have come here. You hear reports like, I don't know, 2 out of 3 of these people that are coming from around the world to enter our country are men between the ages of 20 and 30.
Single men, yeah.
Single men with backpacks.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just coming here from around the world.
Yeah.
The Chinese are sending people to the southern. What they do is they fly into Mexico City or then they come up to the border. Then yep. they walk across.
Yep.
So this is all on Joe Biden.
100%.
But that's not the way we're going to hear it. We're going to hear it's...
Well, all right, this is the second part of the story to your what you're about to right. say, what Fred brought up at our story meeting this morning. The Associated Press, which represents the left-wing news media in this country,
yes.
that they're part, they're the Associated Press. Associated Press is basically a news agency that's used by newspapers and TV stations and radio stations all over America. You subscribe to the Associated Press, and they're basically got a monopoly. If you want to get news, you've got to subscribe to the mm-hmm. right. Am I right, Fred?
That
for
is
most
correct.
People,
that is correct.
And so, what have they done here with this particular story?
They have omitted the suspect's immigration status. They're not talking about that the man charged with the murder is in this country illegally. You know what their focus was on the weekend? It just points to the danger of young women jogging in the morning.
Well, first of all, I would agree that nowadays that is becoming increasingly dangerous if you're a female.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let my daughter. My daughter run by herself, except in my front, you know, on the street in front of our house, and I'd be out yep. there in my lawn chair.
Yeah, with a shotgun.
I mean, it's a dangerous world we live in.
It is dangerous, but it is irresponsible
right.
for AP, Associated Press, to not cover the fact that the prime
right.
suspect
right.
is here illegally.
And the reason for that is obvious. AP is left-wing. Joe Biden is left-wing. let everybody into this country. They're left wingers, so they don't want to make their side look bad.
Right. Yeah.
It makes their side look bad when you point out, hey, this guy shouldn't have been here in the first place. If he would have been deported or stopped at the border, this young lady, this precious young lady at the University of Georgia, this student, nursing student, her name?
Is Lakin Riley. By the way,
she would still be alive.
She is a nursing student at Augusta University in Georgia, but did previously attend University of Georgia.
Okay. Anyway. Anyway, that's the big story. There's two, the death of her, but also the cover-up by the mainstream media on who's responsible for it.
But here's what the Associated Press did cover extensively this weekend. Now, have a listen to this. There were vigils across the country for this. And this has to do with the story of a person, Oklahoma teenager Nex Benedict, who identifies as non-binary.
So what does that mean for those who don't know?
Well, that means most people for all of human history, the vast majority, understand that that the human race is divided into male and female.
Okay.
That it's a binary. You have two. You have two sexes, two genders. And non-binary means, as a person, I reject that, and the number of genders is uncountable. So this person...
They're a person who would say, I'm neither male or female.
Right.
Even though they are.
And
they're one or the other.
They refer to themselves using the pronoun they.
Okay.
And so the Associated Press, politically correct woke, identifies Nex as they in the second sentence.
Right.
Fox News
does the same thing.
It's really confusing if you're reading. All of a sudden you're talking about an individual and the next pronoun is they.
Right.
Who are we talking about? Anyway, this 16-year-old Benedict had an altercation with three girls in the Wawasa High School bathroom. This is in Oklahoma. Apparently, according to reports, he threw water on the girls. The girls responded. All right? He's a guy. He passed away. And instantly, this was... reported as another incident of violence against LGBTQ plus
people. And the implication is this guy was beat to death.
Yes.
Because he was non-binary or trans.
Yes.
I guess.
All of that is not true. We know that now. He survived. He went home. He did pass away. I'm saying he. But, and of course, instantly, he's the hero. However, I'm reading now from an Associated Press story, four or five paragraphs down, while a two-week police warrant states that investigators were seeking evidence in a felony murder, the department has since said Benedict's death was not a result of injuries suffered in the fight based on the preliminary results of the autopsy. He died for some other reason.
Yeah, it would have been possible had he been in a fight with these girls. He'd been pushed. He hit his head. Later on, you go home, you can die of a head injury later on in the day or at night, but the preliminary autopsy reports state that's not.
But still, they're holding vigils in major cities right across the United States, lifting this guy up as some kind of hero.
It's Jesse Smollett moment again. Is what it is. The left, that they have a narrative of the, you know. Christians, right wing,
Christian nationalists. Christians,
these people are the ones killing trans folks, okay, because of their hate.
Mm-hmm.
That's their narrative. And so when something happens like this right here, that's all they're going to push day and night. They're not even going to stop to think about it, whether it could be true or not, or whether it's what the facts are. It's the same way with Jussie Smollett, the black actor there who claimed he was attacked by two MAGA white guys at 2 a.m. in the morning in Chicago. Or was it Chicago?
I think that's right. I think it was Chicago.
In Chicago at 2 a.m. who yelled out, "This is MAGA country," while they waited on him to come out of Subway.
In freezing temperatures.
Carrying a noose and some other kind of liquid.
Was it some bleach or something?
Yeah. Yeah, that happens more than you think. You know, that's what MAGA white guys with red hats do in Chicago in the middle of the morning in January. So I'm just saying the media, though, went with that story. You remember that? They went with that story as if it could possibly be true.
Yeah.
Right. Why did they do that? Mm-hmm. They do that because they wanted it to be true.
Right.
Because they wanted it to be true because it promotes their narrative. White, Christian, bad people. They terrorize African Americans. They terrorize trans people.
Mm-hmm.
And so and quite frankly, just come to the conclusion on that. I'll put a therefore in there for these people, these lefties. Therefore, we have a right to imprison them or stop their speech,
mm-hmm.
stop their churches, go after them, pull their radio licenses. You see what I'm saying here? They build this narrative of these people are terrible, horrible threats to society. Therefore, they need to be controlled. That's where they ultimately want to go.
And we need to teach children in schools
right.
to accept and embrace the LGBTQ community so they don't become haters. Listen, this whole narrative started, for the most part, in terms of being widely disseminated in 1998. I think it was in October. The death of Matthew Shepard.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
That started, and the immediate narrative was, see what hateful words do. It caused these two men to pick up Matthew Shepard at a bar and take him out. I think it was Oklahoma.
Wyoming.
Was it Wyoming? Yeah, that's right. Take him out and beat him to death. Right.
He was a homosexual. He was at a homosexual bar, I think.
I think it was a regular bar.
Regular bar. Okay.
And the narrative fell apart, although at that point the media didn't care that Matthew Shepard was involved in illegal activities with one of the guys that killed him, who was also
gay,
at least bisexual or gay.
Yeah.
And it was over a drug deal gone bad.
Right.
That's why. But
that wasn't the narrative the national media pushed.
And it's still the narrative. The narrative is hateful words from hateful people like Christians. All right. And I remember the news media showing one of the suspects, his apartment door or the room to his bedroom had a cross on it. And it was in all the papers, all the magazines. See, your hateful religion causes you to be hateful towards homosexuals, and that hateful language caused these two men to kill Matthew Shepard. And to this day, he's still kind of a saint in the LGBT community, kind of like a martyr, like you're saying.
This is George Floyd,
right?
Them type thing. All right, we got to take a time out right here. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Fred, what's the name of that? It's Lake and Riley.
Yes, Lake and Riley.
Yes. She was a young lady who was killed.
Yes, Lake and Riley, 22 years old.
I would just ask people to pray for her parents, her family, because I can't imagine what they're going through.
And not just the heartbreak, but the frustration and anger that this should never have happened.
Right. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, our spiritual heritage tours are halfway full. If you want to go with us, we have a June tour and a September tour, and then we have two separate tours. We go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. That's one tour. And then back-to-back with that is our tour of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and George Washington's home, Mount Vernon. So we're going on those tours this summer and the fall. And if that's something you want to do, we call it a vacation with a purpose. With the dates, the cost, the itinerary, everything is available for viewing at this website, spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com. Stephen McDowell, president of the Providence Foundation and a historian, will be with us all along the trip. So you'll get that added bonus. Everywhere we go, Stephen knows about the people, places, the times, the events, and what he shares is invaluable for this tour, Spiritual Heritage Tour. So Stephen and his wife Beth will be with us all along the way. So again, spiritualheritagetours.com is the website for all the information if you're interested in going with us. Tim Wildman here, Ed Battagliano, and Fred Jackson. You're listening to Today's Issues on this Monday, February the 26th, here on American Family Radio. Joining us now from Atlanta is Rob West. Rob precedes us with his show here on American Family Radio. Faith and Finance, heard at 9 a.m. Central Time right here on AFR Weekdays. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, gentlemen. And by the way, I want to vouch for Ed. I actually laid eyes on him at NRB, so I can tell you he was officially there.
Okay. He was there.
He was there.
I was, and it wasn't a pretty sight, was it, Rob?
No, I didn't say that.
So, Rob, your offices are what? You're just northwest of Atlanta, right?
We are, yes. I'm about 90 minutes from Athens, and my oldest is a freshman there on campus, and I appreciate you bringing up this story and asking folks to pray for Lake and Riley's family. Just a horrific events that occurred there resulting in her death, just an unspeakable tragedy. You know, as you mentioned, she was a former student, but very active on campus, actively involved in her sorority there at UGA, lots of friends on campus. She had a bright future ahead of her as a nurse. Just awful. There had not been a homicide on campus there at UGA in nearly 30 years. And obviously everyone's sense of safety has been violated. It's been a really difficult time for the students. They canceled classes on Friday. There's a prayer vigil today. My son's in a Christian fraternity there, and they had the evening of when this event occurred, they had a worship night already planned for months. And as a result, just lots and lots of students ended up there. And it was an incredible time just to share the hope of Jesus. But, you know, one of the things that has not been reported on as much is that the brother of the murder suspect briefly worked in UGA Food Services. So he presented a fake green card to the hiring unit, began a temporary position as a dishwasher in the dining hall where my son eats breakfast every morning. He subsequently failed to submit further documentation to keep the job, was never paid, was fired. But he came across with his brother, and here he is presenting this fake green card to get employment. It's just an awful situation.
Yeah. Yeah, her family, we were just heartbroken. Anybody who's got children or grandchildren. And, you know, like you, that's an incredible record, though, of 30 years without a homicide on campus.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Do you know, Rob, do they have any video surveillance or tapes?
They do. They have an extensive network. I've heard, I don't know this for sure, I've heard that there's some element of this that was recorded on their network of cameras. They've put millions in, even in the last couple of years, just in enhancing it. They have more to come. This is a part of campus, though, where there's a lot of woods and trails. It's next to the intramural fields where students are all the time, but it gets pretty deep into those woods, and apparently this complex of apartments where he lives was adjacent right next to those.
Well, I'm no detective, but this suggests a situation of stalking and knowing that she goes out to run every day and where she runs. That's what this suggests happened here. All right, the story we invited you to come on and talk about, Rob, is a few days old, but nonetheless, we wanted you to discuss this. You want to set it up, Fred?
Yeah, it's quoting a famed financial analyst, Richard X. Is it Bove?
Bove.
All right, yeah. French.
Come on,
I guess.
Fred.
I should know.
Canada, man.
Yeah.
Be better.
He's
be better than that, Fred.
He's predicting the fall of the U.S. economy and says China will take over as the money superpower in his final forecast ahead of his retirement. Says the dollar is finished as the world's reserve currency.
There's a lot there.
Whole bunch.
I guess the bottom line is, not the bottom line, but first step is the U.S. dollar is what's called the world's reserve currency. Can you give us a layman's definition of that in 2 minutes?
I mean, this was cemented in the aftermath of World War II in 1944 at what's called the Bretton Woods Conference, where 44 countries agreed to the creation of the IMF and the World Bank, and it established the U.S. as the world's reserve currency. Today, the U.S. dollar is involved in almost 90% of foreign exchange transactions. And so we're clearly the leader, the most trusted, and I think that's the key as it relates to what's being described here by Mr. Bove, who I think appropriately predicted some of what happened with the financial crisis, but is also considered by many folks to be somewhat of an alarmist. I would describe what's taking place as a slow leak from the U.S. in terms of our dominance in reserve currency status versus a collapse. China has major problems. I mean, they've formed a real estate bubble, and it's bursting before our eyes. You know, they have an overdependence on real estate. We've all seen the video of these so-called empty cities, these vacant neighborhoods, and sometimes whole cities that were built and never inhabited. They're a physical manifestation of their overdevelopment in real estate and dependence on housing as an investment strategy. And they've got massive private debt way beyond us. They've got population problems because of the one-child policy that are much worse than our own. And they've got a significant problem with the rule of law. And we've never had an authoritarian dictatorship as a world reserve currency. You just simply have to be trusted by the global markets, which is why the U.S. occupies that position. I would say we're still the most trusted, but losing confidence to the yuan, to the yen, to the euro. Now, you don't normally lose reserve status unless you lose a war. So I think our dominance as the global reserve currency is cemented. I think that will continue. And, you know, we're outpacing the rest of the world. I mean, last year the U.S. GDP was 23% of the rest of the world. This year it's 25%. It's reasonably likely, I think, for the first time in our lifetime that we could have a debt crisis here in the U.S., probably in the next decade, similar to what we saw happen, in the European crisis. But you don't lose reserve status. You could go through a debt crisis like that and maintain that. So I would say that
slowly. 2 minutes is up.
It's more timely. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's okay. No, I just wanted to let you know. We've run out of time.
Did I do sufficient?
Yeah, you did sufficient. Yeah, yeah. So China, you mentioned China. Yeah, because if the U.S. dollar was going to be replaced, as the world's reserve currency. That is the premier currency in the world that, as you say, that is trusted. He would have to be replaced by something. Well, there's nothing in the world that, looking around, I'm just a layman here. I know you study this for a living here, but there's nothing in the world that comes close.
No.
At least,
no.
To, huh?
So that's exactly right. I mean, even the BRICS, right, in 2006, so, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China.
Right.
But you've got Russia and China as a part of that foursome. And, you know, it's kind of like the joke. You remember the joke about the guys that are out in the woods and they see a bear coming and one stops to put his sneakers on. The other says, you're not going to outrun that bear. He says, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. And, you know, and I think it's the same idea here with regard to the rest of the world. Who's in second place?
Yeah. Ed, Fred.
Well, and Rob, one of the things that Tim and I have talked about, this goes back, I don't know, 10 years we've been talking about the increasing debt. It didn't even start with Barack Obama, but it certainly went through the roof. But we were, you know, we would frequently talk about, well, how many trillions can we be in debt before it, you know, has a, before you risk collapse. And one of the things Tim would always say is, well, if it did collapse, it would certainly take the world economy with it. But if you're already at the top of the heap,
right,
relatively speaking, if everyone goes down, you're still at the top of the heap.
Exactly.
Is that fair to say
I think that's a fair assessment, because it's, again, you have to look at who's in second place here and who would come in. I mean, we passed 100% debt to GDP back in, I think it was 2013. We're now at about 125%. Can we sustain that? Yeah, but the trajectory is a disaster. I mean, the amount of debt we're adding to it with, you know, now interest about to be our largest federal expenditure annually. That's not the case today. It soon will be, especially with these higher interest rates, is a real problem. We've got to deal with it. But you're right. Who is going to come in and replace us?
I would say, you said, quote, we've got to deal with it. I would say, quote, we never will. But it'll have to be painfully experienced. That's my view. But
it'd be forced on us.
Huh?
It'd be forced on us.
Yes, but that's out in the future. Okay, that's out there down the road.
In the meantime, let's keep forgiving student loans.
Right.
And, you know, we've got all kinds of...
I had one other question, then. Sure. I know Fred has a question. But I guess what most Americans are concerned with is the everyday economic issues facing people, namely the interest rate. Housing... the housing market, which is huge in America in determining how our economy goes, the interest rates, has that slowed down? Go ahead. Talk about that.
You sure? Yeah. I mean, so it's a lagging effect, right? And so we've not fully felt the effect of it because the average person has just hunkered down. They're not moving unless they absolutely have to. So most people are still, despite these higher interest rates, enjoying those 2.5-3% rates that we got so accustomed to, and they're not about to move. The question is, how long is this going to go on, and how many people can avoid having to reset that mortgage by moving and jumping up to 7? But housing is the least affordable it's been ever right now, when you combine the fact that we've got the average home in America now north of $400,000, and we've got these interest rates up at, you know, even though historically they're still on the low end, they're, you know, 2x what they were, you know, a couple of years ago, and it's just creating a real problem.
Fred here. I just, so it's clear for our audience. So the prediction of this this gentleman is, you're not agreeing.
Mr. Bove.
Yeah, that it's, you know, we're not going to lose superpower status for our currency. However, you're not saying that Bidenomics is a success, because by any stretch of the imagination. So you've got this big umbrella issue that, you know, our currency is going to remain the dominant one. But underneath that, the American people are saying we're hurting. And I don't see anything in Bidenomics, although the Democrats tried to argue this, that we're going to dig ourselves out of this hole anytime soon.
Absolutely. Bidenomics is a disaster. It is affecting the person that's on the other end of the airwaves today in their wallet. You know, we're still living off of President Trump's tax cuts. We're still living off of some of his deregulation. But everything that Biden put back in place is trying to unwind that. What we need are leaders that understand a biblical worldview of economics and wealth creation, that we are more mind than mouth. We're not just consumers. We were created in the image of God to be workers, to be productive, to take God's creation and improve it. And when we do that, we have economic expansion, and then we give back to the God who created us to recalibrate our hearts, and that creates a virtuous cycle. So we need to get government out of the way, stop putting the state in place of God and the Federal Reserve, and follow, you know, God's plan. And that's why we need leaders who understand that.
Yeah. Rob West joining us now. Well, thank you, Rob, very much.
Appreciate you guys. Always enjoy our time together.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Hey, it was good seeing you, Rob, at NRB.
You too, Ed. You looked great, man.
He gets that a lot.
No, yeah. I don't. Yeah.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate
See
it.
You guys.
Okay. That's Rob West joining us from Georgia there.
Right now, I've got to play a clip here to go along with what we've just been talking about.
Okay.
The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, is apparently here on the East Coast, and he did an interview with Meet the Press on the weekend. And I've got to play this clip. He was asked about Joe Biden and his liabilities and his vulnerabilities, and I want you to hear what Gavin Newsom says about Joe Biden. Cut number 7.
I revere his record. I mean, what he's done in 3 years has been a masterclass. I've been out with, as you know, on the campaign trail. I was just out in California. I've seen him up close. I've seen him from far. But here's my point. It's because of his age that he's been so successful. And because we've seen these bipartisan accomplishments, because of his capacity of understanding, because of his leadership. So the opportunity to express that for 4 more years, what a gift it is for the American people.
Okay, now that was politically foolish, okay? Now, first of all, if you're just the governor of California and you don't have any presidential plans, that doesn't cost you anything to go on a show and say, I love Joe Biden. He's awesome.
I revere him,
okay? But if you're planning on running for president and you suspect that Joe Biden is not going to get the nomination and you might be first up at the convention, what you just said is going to link you and every Republican ad to the person that is dragging down your party. I don't understand that kind of commentary. He is, just imagine the Republican ads. They're going to show that quote and him saying, I revere him. His record was a masterclass. Then the Republicans are going to say, you want more of Joe Biden? Elect Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with everything you said. How long have we, Republicans and Democrats both, they gaslight you all day.
That's true.
They spin all day. They deny reality all day, on different various things. But now using the word revere by Gavin Newsom, that probably puts him at the top of gaslighting.
Yes,
right now with a capital G. So, listen, here we are, almost March, right?
Yeah, but this later this week.
So, how much longer would Biden and the Democrats wait to replace him? I mean, we're moving into the spring here, and I would have thought by now they would have replaced him, but they haven't.
I don't think they're going to replace him before the convention.
The Democrat convention in the summer, whenever that is.
And I've always said, I think it's 50-50 that they do it then. I think if Joe Biden can make it health-wise to the convention, gets the nomination, then possibly between the I think Joe Biden will win against Donald Trump, and then whoever his vice president is after the convention, that person takes over.
So do you think that the Democrats, I think the Democrats are rolling the dice.
I think so too.
I think they're rolling the dice. They think Biden can beat Donald Trump.
Yes.
And I also think there's stuff going on in the background right now that there are Democrats who are helping Nikki Haley and with the help of the media.
Why would you do that?
If you listen to Nikki Haley's speech on Saturday night, she lost South Carolina by 21, 22 points, roughly. But she's in the race. She says, I'm the only one that can bring the country together. As somebody responded, she can't bring Republicans together. How does she bring the country together? But I think we are seeing the manifestation of the Liz Cheney, old Bush family, Mitt Romney element of the Republican Party. I think Nikki Haley is picking that part
but
of the vote.
But those aren't Democrats.
No. But they're rhinos. The Republican Party is divided. The Democrats are glad to see that division. And they're going to support the Democrats, that rhino division. That's why I think Michigan tomorrow.
So you mean to weaken Donald Trump?
To weaken Donald Trump, exactly. I think in Michigan tomorrow it's going to be really interesting. And then we have Super Tuesday, which is a week from tomorrow, to see what happens. There's talk, and maybe that's all it is right now, of Nikki Haley.
People are talking.
They're talking,
right.
Nikki Haley, third party, all of that sort of thing.
So she said that she's not dropping out.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. There is a quote wing of the Republic. There's in the Democrat Party, there's wings. And then the Republican Party, there's wings. And then the factions, whatever you want to call them, divisions. But they all join together in the end. Because you had Bernie Sanders v. Hillary Clinton, remember that?
Right.
And you had Biden, remember, he was like sixth among the Democrats when
and
he
then
ran.
And everyone said, we're dropping out,
right.
We're supporting Joe
right.
Biden.
Right. With Nikki Haley, let me offer a alternative, maybe not disagree. I'm not disagreeing with you, Fred, although you were just quoting experts. And I'm not suggesting that I even believe what I'm about to say. I always have to say that. I'm just giving you an analysis, maybe or a opinion that's maybe different from that. That is this. It's clear that there's 30-40% of people who voted in these Republican primaries who don't want Donald Trump to be the nominee. Okay? Listen. Otherwise, a 60-40 beatdown in your home state against, and that's what I would call it, against Nikki Haley, that's something to celebrate, right?
Yeah.
But when you're viewed as the incumbent and you only get 60%, that's not good. Now, you might say, well, that's in her home state. Obviously, she's going to get more than she would in, say, another state where she's not the former governor. I guess that will be the test in Michigan, seems to me. You're saying if he starts beating her 80-20, 90-10, and she doesn't have any money, she'll have to drop out.
The Koch brothers said this morning they're going to stop giving her money.
Right, but Pepsi brothers, they're coming in. They're coming in. Did you not hear that? Koch's out, Pepsi's in. No, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. Is she able to get 60-40 in Michigan, or does he begin to dominate with bigger numbers? I guess that would be the what remains to be seen. But, I think she's also thinking if he doesn't make it, Trump doesn't make it for whatever reason, I'm going to be number two in delegates. You know, going into the, so I'm going to stick
it
out.
That's a legitimate strategy, the way the primaries and the conventions operate. If you stay in the race and pick up 35%
of the delegates,
and this is probably a calculation that the Nikki
Haley
team.
What if Trump has a heart attack in June?
Or one of these lawsuits or prosecutions.
Right.
puts him in prison, and I'm not saying that I think that's going to happen. I'm just saying if he cannot get the nomination for whatever reason, she makes the case. Listen, I was number two.
Right, right.
I faithfully went through the process.
Right. I stuck it out.
I fought
the good fight. I finished second. Now he's not there.
Right.
I'm just saying that may be what she's thinking.
Yeah.
You know, at least right now. But, you know, that's one thing to say I'm staying in right now, and then 2 weeks from now they come in and say, ma'am, we can't go to lunch today.
Yes, that's true.
Why is that? Because we got $7.25 left in the campaign. Yep. You know what I'm saying? That could happen. That kind of thing could happen right there. But also back to Biden and Trump. Biden could be at the point of his dementia, if that's what he has, where he's too stubborn. And he says, they come and say, sir, we'd like for you to back out, you know, and give Gavin Newsom the baton. He said, no, I'm not.
Right.
I'm good.
I'm still good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Going strong.
I'm going strong. Now, where's the ice cream? We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.